Hi, a very good morning. My name is Melissa. Thanks for joining us for MIT's fourth quarter and full financial year result briefing. We have the management team of MIT on site for this virtual briefing. We have Guowei, our CEO, Lily, our CFO, Dieter, head of investment, Serene, head of asset, Sarah, our U.S. Asset manager, and also Kim, who leads the marketing team. The results presentation slides were issued last evening via SGXNet and available on MIT's website. We will use it for this morning's briefing. Without further ado, may I invite Guowei to provide a short update on MIT's performance. Guowei, please.
Can you hear us? Can you hear us? I assume you can. If not, you can speak, you know, half an hour without your hearing anything. It will be spending another 30 minutes without any productive things done. So anyway, our fourth quarter and full financial results, I hope you can see we have projected it. We can go on to the highlights and talk about what we have delivered. I think all in all, we have a relatively resilient performance, and the revenue contributions from the new projects had been quite meaningful. If you look at the net property income improvement, 0.6% year-on-year to $521 million. And the amount that we are able to deliver to unit holders has increased 2.7% to $378.3 million. But on a DPU basis, if you look at the full-year performance, we have a 1% dip compared to the previous year actual results. So we are delivering 13.43%. Of course, if you look at this in relation to the higher distribution available, this is driven mainly by the slightly larger unit base that we have. You could remember we issued $200 million of equity in the third quarter last year for our Osaka data center acquisition. So that has resulted in this small little drag. All in all, we are still looking at a fairly resilient financial performance. If we look at the second set of bullet points on the operational performance, we have reported positive reversions across all property segments. The aggregate average, we are looking at positive 6.6%. So if you look at the rental revisions over the last 10 quarters has been positive, as what we have outlined in some of our conversations. For the last 2.5 years, we have turned a corner as far as reversions are concerned. But if you look at the kind of trend, the previous quarter 7.2, this quarter 6.6, and three quarters back, it was 8.8%. So it is, a case of us reaching a kind of point of diminishing returns. Would we get, or would we be able to have rental revisions, positive rental revisions next few quarters? We'll probably have. But my sense is that we'll probably trend towards a 4-5% level. I think quite difficult to look at, us going for high, even high single-digit figures. Because as you might have seen, with 10 quarters of consecutive rent, positive rent revisions, by the time we hit another two quarters, we will be catching the front end of this so-called period of positive rent revision. So the kind of upward adjustment had already been effected about 3 years back. So that kind of additional upshift from the rental rate perspective will be a bit more, I would say, muted. Now, going on to the rent levels, we are registering higher rent levels. That has been fairly encouraging. $2.22 for the Singapore portfolio and $2.51 for the North American portfolio. For the North American portfolio, you might have seen in some of our detailed numbers, we see a small upshift. And if you look at the for our AT&T representation, essentially when AT&T did the extension of 1 year for our San Diego asset, we had a small little bump, yeah, in terms of rental rate. So from rental rate perspective, we see a higher so-called a numerical representation. But that one, I would say, is temporary. The portfolio valuation is relatively stable. If you look at that from a face value perspective, $8.8 billion, and compared to last year, 0.9% increase. But if you look a little bit more deeply, compared to book value, we had some write downs. If you look at our other announcements on the valuations for this year, portfolio valuation has seen a small uptick, mainly because of the addition of our Osaka data center that we took on third quarter last year. So that had, you know, masked that the downshift in like-for-like valuation adjustment. Later we can run through some of the details, but certainly from the perspective of the portfolio management, we continue to look at rebalancing it, improving the profile. For the Osaka data center, as some of you may know, is a phase completion kind of arrangement because it's not a fully completed or fully fitted asset. We have phases 2, 3, 4 to be done. We have recently completed the phase 2 fit-out works. And of course, we are receiving the corresponding revenue contribution. So as of now, 80% done. We have another 10 plus 10 for phases 3 and 4 in this year that we would expect completion. Now, divestment is another key initiative that we would look at a bit more closely. And some of you may know we have reached out to the market to you know, get a sense of interest for a broad range of assets in our portfolio, the Singapore assets, the Value Factory assets, business park buildings, and some of our U.S. data centers. The demand has not been that strong. It's fairly lukewarm. Some level of interest, but not at a level where we can or the kind of the interest level, not at a stage where we are able to cross the line and go into a firm kind of transaction. So we will continue to look at this divestment initiative this year. We think the market should be more conducive. While the interest rate cut start date has been shifting back and forth, probably more back based on the current set of articulations. But we think is a case of when, not a case of you know, whether. And we think the market will probably respond favorably to that towards the later part of the year. And there might be windows available for us to look at divesting some of our assets. But of course, we have successfully completed one, the Tanglin Halt Feather Factory Cluster, $50.6 million. That was completed just before the end of the financial year on 27th of March. I think some of you all have asked, I think on the gains that we will be distributing. I think relative to what our original cost plus our capitalized cost, we have gains of roughly 13 million Singapore dollars. So our intention is to distribute this $13 million equally over the four quarters in this financial year. So, of course, you won't see this in the fourth quarter set of results. The next quarter, we will have this as a line item for the distribution of gains. Now, on the capital management part, we'll continue to strengthen our balance sheet. And we look at opportunistic issuances of bonds or getting our borrowings hedged at a attractive, favorable rates whenever we can. So we have recently issued 50 million Singapore dollars, 3 years at 3.75%. So that will give us a bit more certainty and also allow us to lock in, I would say, a reasonable rate in the meantime. Hedge borrowings, we have reported just a shade below 85%. So we have a fairly good level of protection. Average tenure for the hedge, 3.7 years, which matches our borrowing tenure relatively closely. So we have a bit of a kind of a good match along this front. Leverage ratio, we think is still relatively healthy. 38.7% gives us a bit of headroom to take on projects and to look at the possible acquisitions to help us further diversify and strengthen the portfolio. So I think that rounds up the key highlights. Maybe I'll go to the valuation part to give a bit of color. So this is on slide number 12. The figure which I've outlined earlier, you can see aggregate 8802 for the entire portfolio. So they are, of course, essentially some write-downs across the portfolio. In the Singapore portfolio, mainly due to the shortening land tenure clusters. Because this is a case of a mathematical representation. Once your assets go to a stage of below, say, 15 or 16 years of balance and tenure balance, cap rates generally the same, except for, compared to last year, except for the Singapore data centers, because of the very high demand for this space. We have seen a roughly 50% cap rate compression for the Singapore data centers. And of course, mind you, this is the year where we have switched valuers. So while we see that as an indication of the read of the market, because when you shift girlfriends, you cannot do a like-for-like comparison. You say, last time you did this to me, or last year you did this to me, this year you did another thing. All right? So but I think the cap rates being largely the same for the rest of our sectors is an indication of the stability in the Singapore market. Now, whereas for the U.S. data center market, we're seeing cap rate expansions generally across the board, except for some one or two assets where we see site compression because of the relative strength of certain submarkets. Now, for the U.S. Assets, I think if you look at the cap rate reference, most of them will be clustering around the 5.75, 6, 6. Five level. The broad range, at the extreme end, at the low end, 5%. At the high end, I think it's 8.25%. So this is, of course, a tighter cap rate. Assets are driven by the location and the kind of attractive kind of attributes. Like 180 Peachtree at Atlanta, is exhibiting the 5% cap rate because it's 100% occupied, long leases, and high demand area. The 8% cap rate is represented by Arlington asset because the tenant left in March 2023. So from a cash flow perspective, there is nothing apparent yet, you know, in terms of releasing kind of a prospect. So some of this was taken into effect. But if you look across the board, the range of cap rate expansion, we would see them clustering around +25 to +75 basis points. And that represents roughly 64% of all the assets we have. So I think that will give you a sense. I think if you are looking at modeling that kind of effect, you can look at that range, or you can pin whether a 50 basis point, you know, for getting a rough gauge. So do we see this cap rate continue to expand next year? Of course, it's not easy to stare into the crystal ball and forecast, but we think we are near or at the bottom because the cap rates are quite sensitive to your funding costs and interest rate environment, and the market should, I would say, turn the corner along this front, and hopefully your cap rates would at least be stable. And if not, if the market really continues to be exuberant, especially for the data center assets, we might see some improvements. But I think the stability should be maintained henceforth. Okay?
Yeah. I think we will move into Q&A. If I can request for the analyst to state your name and firm and limit your questions to two per round. I think the first one on the line is Mervyn. Mervyn, please.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Congrats to the way on the
morning
results. First question, in terms of rental reversion guidance for the coming year, any thoughts on that and how you're seeing demand? Second question I have is in terms of the distribution for JVs, it's very strong, I think up to 3% year on year. What's happening there, given that I presume you're facing high interest costs and there's been a drop in occupancy from the US portfolio? Is there a higher payout ratio, capital return, or what's happening there? Thanks.
Yeah, okay. I think the rent revisions outlook, I have touched a little earlier. We think we still be able to nudge rents up certain segments of our market, especially the more generic spaces. We are getting still decent rent levels. I have talked about roughly 5% positive rent revisions, and we should be able to maintain that for another 2 or 3 quarters. Then we'll see, as I also outlined earlier, by that time we would have reached a 3-year cycle and we would be at the start of the current set of rent upshift cycle. Then that increase might be more muted. Now on the rent levels, we think the business park space would still be under a bit more pressure because the sub-market vacancies on a relative basis are still high in the International Business Park and Changi Business Park space. While we have fairly respectable occupancy level, you know, above 80%, but the kind of challenge in this kind of market and the competition for prospects is tough, is stiff. That said, you might have seen, you know, us getting high new rates. If you look at the chart we have on page 23, 431 for business park buildings. So it's encouraging, but it may not tell you the entire story. I think just as so-called a bit of a background, we had a couple of small tenant, or I won't describe them as small tenants, but tenants who took up small amount of space. 1,000 square feet for a coffee joint, $5 per square foot. Two small tenants, slightly more than 2,000 square feet, 440 or 450 level. So in the mid $4 level. So that has helped us, you know, pull up that weighted average figure. But generally, there's still a lot of competition in that space. Now, of course, if you look a bit more closely at the other sector, the high-tech buildings, this aggregate kind of representation may not tell the full story, because the new rents that we are able to get are not representative of what we see at, say, our Kallang Wave high-tech buildings. We think we'll still be able to do $4 plus minus for that space. But the kind of tenants that we can get, I would say not very large tenants. We'll be looking at those 10,000 plus minus square feet kind of tenants for the time being, unlike those 70,000, 100,000 square feet tenants that is very difficult to come by in the market. Now,
distribution in JV.
If you're talking about the comparison, what you might have seen or might not have noted is that there's a dip at the beginning of the year from the amount that we have withheld for the tenant that we did not name, that ran into arrears issue and that had undergone a Chapter 11 proceedings. So because of the amount withheld, we had a slightly lower amount of distributions from the JV. But I think we noted that had been since resolved. We have received the arrears, and of course the amount withheld had been released. So that has resulted more directly from this particular tenant, the additional contribution of about $2 million that were recorded in that line distribution from JV. So that has been helpful. So maybe since we are on this topic, we can close up a loop on this outcome of the proceedings. As you could have read in some of our earlier materials, all eight of the leases were taken over, but we had some modifications to two of the leases. One, we had a downward rent adjustment. The other one, there's a right of termination given with 6 months notice. So we are now seeing that the effect of the termination right being exercised. So we'll see that effect, not now, that right had been exercised. We are looking at the expiration on the 8th of September 2024 this year. So that is at this East Tech Circle, and the impact to the portfolio is roughly 0.3%. So that is anticipated, but I think that slightly later exercise of a right gave us a bit of reprieve, and we continue to get the revenue contribution in the meantime. So I think that should close up that part on this tenant.
All right, thank you. We have Ezean. Ezean, would you like to ask your questions, please?
Sure, thank you for the presentation. It's Ezean from OCBC Credit Research. So my two questions is, the first one is about US data centers. So you mentioned that the REIT may be looking to divest US data centers. Is there any similar characteristics of these US assets that is planned for divestments, like what's the reasons? And then the second one is, if you can clarify more on the accounting of the Osaka data center, because the stake is not, the interest is not 100% yet. but then there is another 20% that remains to be paid. So in terms of the consolidated net property income, how is it actually recognized? Yeah, that's all for me. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Now, for the U.S. data centers, I think certainly from the perspective of a portfolio manager, we will try to divest ones that are less relevant to us, whether financially or operationally or from the attributes perspective. So assets that are not, likely to give us, reasonable revenue contributions, whether due to occupancy issues, due to attributes issues, we will look at divesting. An ideal situation is that, you know, things that are, or assets that are a little less interesting to us might appeal to buyers who value, some of the other attributes. The ones that we have mentioned earlier, like, for example, our San Diego asset. Of course, now we have the extension of a year from AT&T. We get a bit of a premium rent, but that lease will expire 31st December 2024. Would we be able to get a replacement tenant in the data center space? We won't be. We're not too sure now. We are reaching out to the market. But I think we have outlined before that the asset is adjacent to a vibrant biotech or life science market in San Diego. It's one of the few largest life sciences market in the U.S. So that might appeal to a different group of developers or space users. So we'll be looking for matches like this. There are some assets that we have lower occupancies or that are vacant, similar kind of consideration, like, for example, our Arlington asset. Say, if we are not able to lease meaningfully or at the right pricing, but if you have an end user that can repurpose the facility at the right price, it will be something you look at. That is one perspective. The other perspective is that for some of the assets that are, I would say, fully valued, we have fully exploited all the kind of opportunities available in moving up occupancies, moving up rents, and if it's relatively stable and we can get a good offer from the market, is something that we would consider, because at the end of the day, if we can get or if we can divest the asset at cap rates that are meaningfully tighter than what our valuation says, than what we think we'll be able to work on in the years to come, because these are fully valued, fully so-called worked assets, then we could crystallize some of the gains, channel the capital or recycle the capital into other maybe a more interesting opportunity. So these are some of the options that we're looking at. And there's another so-called subset, which is the kind of interest that we have received from the market or even end users or the existing tenants who express the interest of or who are exploring the possibilities of buying over the premise that they are occupying. So these are possibilities that we'll be looking at. And as a professional portfolio manager, while we like our assets, we don't form emotional attachments to them. We'll look at the economic outcome and see, you know, whether it makes sense for the platform for us to keep, hold, redo, or divest, you know. So I think that should provide a bit more color on how we approach the possibilities in our U.S. portfolio. Now, on the Osaka data center mathematical gymnastics, I'll allow the gymnast to answer the question.
Hi, morning. Okay, for the Japan acquisition, basically, as you know, we have only paid up to 80% of the agreed purchase cost in view for the fit-out works that are still outstanding, so that's another two phases to go. In terms of accounting, we would have reported in the P&L the relevant income with respect to the 80%. So I think the agreement that's been set up during the acquisition is that as the fit-out works are completed, we will pay the proportionate portion of the purchase consideration, and at the same time, we will also receive the relevant income stream from it. Mm. So,
sorry,
yeah,
I know
so
you.
In our book,
sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, because you only allowed me two questions. I thought I can squeeze one slight one as a follow-up to this data center, this Osaka data center.
Yeah, okay.
So the remaining 20%, how much is that, roughly?
About 20%. So I think that's about 10 billion yen.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, I interrupted you at book value, I think.
Sorry, again?
I interrupted you when you were about to say something about book value.
Oh, I see. Oh, no. So we're saying that on the balance sheet, the book value, we would have also accounted for, that means we would not have accounted for 100% of the valuation as well. So we have adjusted out the fact that there is a balance, Jap Yen 10 plus billion that needs to be paid out.
Thank you, Lily.
Thank you.
Thank you. Derek, would you like to ask your question, please?
Hi, and good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Morning.
Two questions for me. Good morning. My first one is back to Guowei, your thoughts around valuations, right? So you're saying that you want to sell USDCs. Given that your new valuers or your girlfriends give you higher cap rates, right? Do you think you can sell at book or at above purchase price? I'm just curious.
No, okay. We would say take confidence, we have confidence that the valuers are able to or are pricing the figures at what they think the market is transacting at. So, of course, many of you know valuation is an art, but we think those are fairly representative numbers. But that said, we are not fixated on needing to divest or wanting to divest at the prices that are above valuations. Though that had been, our so-called feature in the last five divestments. We always deliver a little bit of profit, whether big or small, some large enough for us to distribute. Of course, those are more opportunistic divestments, and of course we will entertain the opportunities that came then for assets we think we will be able to realize meaningful gains. But now our approach has taken a slightly different posture. We will be looking at the recycling capital. We'll be looking at whether some of these assets are meaningful to us in the longer term. Say if the value continues to decline, not because of cap rate expansion, but because that market demand will be weaker for that particular submarket, or the attributes are not as relevant in the space we're operating in, and we anticipate a constrained valuation figures in the years to come, I think it's something we look at. So maybe a short answer to that is, would we divest below valuations we will consider. But of course, that won't be our first position when we go out to the market. While knowing that, you know, for some of the assets, we have a fairly sizable downshift in valuation. I think as some of you read through the details, some of you might have noticed the largest downshift is our 250 Williams asset, 302 down by $83.6 million or -28%. So that one, other than a cap rate expansion of 1 percentage point, the bigger issue is that about half of the building is commercial office space, and the demand for commercial office usage is extremely low in US and in several developed economies, because most of the people working from home, or most of the staff from these large organizations are working from home. Would that trend change? It may moderate a little in terms of you know, that work from home allocation, but would we get back to the good old days where everybody is in the office? Quite unlikely, because I believe some of you might be sitting in your kitchen, your bedroom, or your study while you're participating in this. So that will become a new phenomenon. So because of that reason, and because it's all stuck in the U.S. market, for this financial year, we have seen that fairly significant downshift in values for assets that have the large office component for this case. But as I said, long and short, would we consider selling below current valuation? Yes, we will look at, you know, the medium to long term prospects, and if it's a meaningful direction for us to take for some of the assets, we will do that.
Got it. More defensive strategy. Okay, so my second question is on interest rates, right? So I think Lily kept interest rate really low, below her guidance of 3.5. So I'm assuming there are some hedges that's yet to roll off. So I'm just wondering, could you give us a refresh guidance for interest rates for this financial year?
I believe my previous guidance was it should remain below 3.5%. But at any rate, if you look at going forward, we have about $220 million of debts that will be interest rate swaps that will be expiring in the financial year, in the coming financial year, of which about most of them are actually Sing dollars, about 70% are Sing dollars. And the expiry tends to be towards the end of the financial year. I think the US dollars is about 67 million Sing. And that's expiring somewhere in mid-2024. But having said that, I think as you recognize the hedge rate, there will be a difference from the current hedge rate vis-a-vis, you know, the replacement rate. So that is likely to have some impact. But because of the quantum, I don't think the impact will be too much. So I hope that we still can try to keep the interest rate as low as we can. But nonetheless, as I said, I don't really think that we are going to shoot beyond the 3.5.
Okay, good. Great. That sounds fantastic. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. We have Dale.
Yep, thanks, Melissa. Yep, hi, this is Dale from DBS. Guowei, thanks for the presentation. Just two questions from me. I think the first one, you know, with regards to what you mentioned about divestments, just wondering, you know, if there's any quantum that you have targeted, or at least, you know, based on the non-core assets that you've targeted for divestments, what is the quantum looking like?
Well, we don't have a very, very specific number. But I think anything between 200 to 500 million Singapore dollars would be a good band to shoot for. Some of our assets we have are relatively chunky. If you look at our business park buildings in Singapore, for example, aggregate slightly more than 500 million Singapore dollars. So last year we tried to see whether there's interest when we package everything together. Not successful in getting a strong interest in that space. So we have to see if we can do one down there, maybe another one asset in the US, maybe in aggregate, we might hit the lower end. So this is a kind of a period where we don't have that clarity yet because we have not re-engaged the market. But we are also not, you know, working on our business contingent on being able to divest because we are not under pressure to, you know, lower our leverage or strengthen our balance sheet at all costs. So we'll still be a bit more opportunistic, but we would engage the market a bit more closely. But the 200 or so million might be that lower bound that could be meaningful to us, that, you know, that would provide a reasonable kind of set of capital that we could deploy elsewhere.
Okay, got it. My second question is on your high-tech park at Kallang Way. I understand that, you know, occupancy is gradually creeping up, your rental rates are holding firm, but just wanted to understand versus your earlier projections, you know, your IRR calculations, how is that trending versus, you know, what you had earlier projected for this redevelopment?
Okay, well, of course, for a income platform and for a REIT, we use IRR as a reference. It is not a threshold that, you know, is a sacrosanct. Now, with a slower leasing up, the IRR, because of the recency effect, you know, on the IRR computation, would result in a bit of a drag. But as of now, I think we should still be able to clear our intended IRR, and the steady state occupancy levels that we're pushing for remains the same. We're talking about 90-95% level, and our current rent levels are holding. So we would reach there, and from the accretion perspective, we think we'll be able to deliver as promised. But as what you have observed very accurately, there will be a drag on IRR because of this over leasing up. Some of you may remember, you know, whenever I'm pressed to come up with a time frame, I always say 6 to 9 months, right? Because 3 months is too short. 1 year, some of you may not accept. It is a realistic kind of time period where we might be able to do something meaningful. Like for our Kallang Way asset, yes, we are, of course, getting our leasing folks to work extremely hard, but we are also adjusting our commission structure and incentive structures as well. Hopefully that would draw more tenants, more prospects, and get some of our external agents to work a little harder, you know, to move up the occupancy. So I think there were invariably several questions on you know, where we reached steady state. I think I would moderate down our earlier kind of trajectory. Realistically, you know, looking at this kind of a small incremental tenants that we are able to commit, we'll probably be looking at 65-70% occupancy level by end of financial year, which is 31st March 2025. So that, I think, is a more realistic and meaningful trajectory for us to shoot for. But I say this, of course, I think our leasing folks working hard, and they are certainly trying very hard to exceed this kind of a trajectory now, so that we can have some pleasant surprise at the end of the financial year or towards the end of financial year. And the big driver at the end of the day would be large users, very large users, because the incremental ones, yeah, we push a little harder, we can get there. But we need those 50-100,000 square feet kind of tenants. You need one or two big ones that would provide a meaningful kind of improvement to the figures. So these kind of animals, that they are present in the rainforest, but not easy to find, right? So we have to hunt a little harder.
Okay, okay, got it. Okay, yeah, that's all from me. Thank you.
Thanks, Dale. We have Brandon. Brandon, would you like to ask the next question?
Hey, morning, Kuwait. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Hi, morning. Just want to ask on the U.S. occupancy, right, at 86.2%. It's really rather low. Do you think this is a bottoming kind of a stage, or you think that there could be more pressure for FY25?
Well, I would not want to promise you that this is the bottom, but we think this is near the bottom because the effect that you see is driven by us accounting for the exits of the two AT&T, the exits of the two AT&T assets at Brentwood, Tennessee, and Milwaukee. So it's fully accounted for this quarter, 86%. But in many of our conversations, I think we talk about us being close, very close and very, very close to getting a replacement tenant for Brentwood. And we are indeed very close. The promise I get from Sarah is that, yes, you'll be on the platter very soon. Okay, the long and short is we received word that we have received a go, you know, a go-ahead from the tenants' committees. So hopefully we're just at the very last stretch, the very last yard for the 100-yard dash, you know, to get the paperwork across. So, yeah, we just need to get that done. And this tenant somehow has very traditional practices. And one of the tricky parts is they need to collect autographs from all the relevant signatories. So hopefully that is the final bit. So with that in place, our occupancy should go back up beyond 90%, about 91%. So that will give us a bit of a reprieve. But of course, the challenges continue to be ahead of us because we do have some expiries coming up, the larger one being the San Diego asset from AT&T. So we'll be keeping a close watch on that. But we are happy that we are able to close up this Brentwood lease soon, then at least we have a bit more room.
Okay. My second question would be on your NPI margins, right? So if you look at this quarter, I do know that it's relatively low, like sub 74%, and we saw quite a bit of declines in most of the asset class. Is this what we should be looking at in terms of modeling for FY25? Or you think it's a bit of one-off because of the lower occupancy?
You're talking about aggregate basis for the whole portfolio, right?
Yeah, on the aggregate, it's 73.7. Mm-hmm. But if you even look through the different segments, except for like Business Park and high-tech, right, a lot of the other spaces kind of came down. And especially the U.S. data center side. So I just want to know, like, from modeling standpoint, is this a normalized number? Or you think that like, there are some one-offs or sort of occupancy-related items in there?
Well, you are absolutely right. There's one element of the occupancy kind of effect. But for the U.S. data centers, as I mentioned earlier, with the AT&T leases being so-called expired, we don't get revenue, but we have expenses like property taxes. So that one, well, for the large assets, is relatively big, and it has resulted in the drag in the NPI. So would we be able to see an upshift in NPI margin this financial year? We don't think so, because until we are able to get the revenue contributions coming in, the cash coming in, we won't be able to kind of reverse that effect. So for modeling purposes, I think you'll be prudent to continue adopting a similar kind of profile until we have the reletting clarity. For the Singapore-based assets, I think, of course, the downshift is a little less, I would say, pronounced. We see an improvement this financial year. Unfortunately, I'm not able to say with certainty. Now, the few big moving parts, property taxes not coming down, utility charges, while there are some quarters that had been expecting or anticipating maybe downward adjustments, we think at best it's going to be stable, maybe moving up a little, because we have on a aggregate basis larger utilization, especially when we have a slightly higher occupancies for our Kallang Way assets. So our landlord part will see larger consumption, all things being equal. And the other effect, which might not be apparent, is that Kallang Way being a fairly significant asset in our portfolio in Singapore, we had the temporary occupation permit, you know, set in March 2023. For 1 year or so after completion, the property would be what we call under the defects liability period, where the maintenance cost is taken on by the contractor or the providers for the services and equipment. So you don't see that represented in cost. But from this year onwards, you know, as all these kind of provisions fall off, we will need to account for the maintenance cost of this asset. So in all likelihood, we would expect the NPI margin to be at this level or shift down a little because of this effect.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much, Boy. That's it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Brendan. Joy, would you like to ask a question? I am mindful of the time. So I think we have online Joy, Tan Xuan, and Terence to round out the session. Joy, please.
Thanks, Nuzza. Morning, Go and team. Just two questions from me. First, going back to US on the Brentwood asset, is there any CapEx required to, you know, to sign this lease? And also just on this portfolio broadly, do you foresee sort of CapEx for yeah, occupancy improvement? In 20.
Okay, we have of course our friend Sarah, who's our head of asset for data centers in the US. She's sitting right in front, putting up her hand, and the one to you know, address your question very enthusiastically.
Hi there. So there are no tenant improvement capital expenses associated with the lease. There are several landlord capital items that would need to be done to the building as a shell. We're anticipating approximately $5 to $6 million in completion of those within the first 12 months of the lease.
Sure. Thank you. And Gowe, if you can just comment on the sort of overall CapEx expectation for 2025.
Okay, I think in aggregate, we are looking at roughly $20 million
US.
And a lot of these relate to roof, waterproofing replacement works. And these are, you know, essential for, you know, our buildings to continue to operate optimally.
And this is for the U.S. portfolio only or inclusive of the same?
Yes, U.S. portfolio only. For the Singapore, we don't anticipate much, only a few million dollars here and there. Because we have been improving our buildings over the years incrementally, you know, as you might have followed, the lift upgrading, toilet upgrading, chiller upgrading works have all been done progressively over the years. I think the only other large project that we're taking on is the solar panel installation, and this is our third phase. We've completed two phases, and we should be completing that this financial year. And that will give us now in aggregate slightly more than 10,000 kilowatt peak of solar energy.
Thank you. And then my second question, just on the divestment, you know, if you look at the bid-ask spread, Singapore versus US, what sort of bid-ask spread are you seeing, and what sort of buyers are you looking at in the market?
Well, I think you might still see maybe 50 bips delta between you know, what we can get from the market, and hopefully this gap closes, and we will be able to find a good point where you know transactions can occur. The buyers, I think, very. Now, Singapore assets, we have shared earlier, a lot of these are investors, as in financial investors, not end users. For the one of our assets, the single user building, 26 Woodlands Loop, we are engaging the market as well. So the type of buyer for that asset, I would say you see more end user type of buyers. For the US, I think it's also a fairly broad range. As I've alluded earlier, there are a couple of smaller ones, there are smaller assets that we have some indication of interest from existing tenants. So these are end user sitting tenants requirements. Whereas for the rest, it's a bit more difficult to read. It could be data center operators. It could be developers. So a fairly broad range. But as far as we are concerned, as long as they can pay, you know, we are not allergic to any investor type or buyer type.
Cool. Thank you for the color.
Thanks, Joy. Tan Chien, would you like to go next?
Hi, good morning. Can I ask about the divestment? If I'm not wrong, the guidance last quarter was 100 to 200 million, and now it's 200 to 500. Can you share a bit more about what has changed?
Yeah, we have decided to, you know, push a little harder. At the end of the day, these are just figures in a band of simulations that we are looking at. And some of this, of course, we need to have some basis. It's built up from the various candidates within our portfolio that we have shortlisted. We look at reasonable probability, low probability, higher probability. So you come up to a kind of band we're looking at. And I think to be, more direct about it, we think the possibility of us getting fantastic acquisition deals this year, not high. Because the market is still in a state of flux unless you get, into a deal where you are in the right place at the right time and you are the right counterparty. So the market is still in a state of flux. And the way for us to get dry powder, the way for us to, you know, move a little ahead of the curve for rebalancing the portfolio, I think we need to look at a bit more divestment. So while I wouldn't describe the range 100-200 as a target. It is some kind of reference level we look at. So that's the slightly higher kind of bound. And as you might have noticed, it's a bigger spread. I won't say 200 and 250. That means we have already one or two assets in mind. But I set a bigger bound so that we would encourage the deal teams, you know, our chaps that are studying this, our chaps that are engaging the market, to keep their minds open to see whether they can stretch the envelope a little. So it's something that we look at. So my point across is that don't try not to read too much into this kind of level. It's not us saying we must do 200 come hell or high water. So it is kind of a reference range that we are looking at. And some of you may remember earlier part of 2023, we were asked, of course, about the divestment portfolio size. That time when we engaged the market, it was even higher, 500 or more. So because that was how we have packaged, you know, some of the assets we have in Singapore when we engage the market. So we will need to go through that discovery process, but it will serve as a guide for us, and we will be getting the teams to work harder on crystallizing the values of our assets.
We've got it. And second question is on the mid-single-digit reversion, right? Does that include U.S.?
No, it doesn't. That one is for the Singapore. I think if you look at the rent revision aggregate data that we talked about earlier, all are for the Singapore portfolio. For the U.S., we do not have much renewals anyway. So I think and for some of the cases, typical renewal upshift is that 2-3%, like what we have embedded in the original leases. So I think that will probably be a reference level we take from there.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Terence, would you do the honors of the last question, please?
Yes. Thanks, Melissa. Hi, Guowei. Just wanted to just clarify Chen's question. I guess for U.S. data centers, like let's say for Brentwood, what kind of reversions are you sort of getting, and what kind of incentives do you have to offer to sign the leases?
Okay, for that one, because the deal is not done first yet, and second is this tenant is very shy, we will not be able to outline, you know, the exact parameters. But I think just to share a little more, the starting rent for this tenant will be a little lower than the last rent paid by AT&T. But if you look at it on an effective rent basis, you know, for the whole AT&T lease period, and the effective rent for this tenant for its entire lease period, you'll be a little higher. So we are looking at you know, slightly better economics in the long term. This one we have 12 months of rent free given. So that is, I would say, you know, the more material part of the package that we have in place. And we don't have any additional tenant incentives embedded in this transaction.
Thanks, Gloria. Please, one more question on the JV interest rate in the US. Could you share what's the JV interest currently, and when is the debt due for refinancing?
Yeah, okay. For this extremely difficult question, I'll have Lily answer.
This is a very difficult question. Okay, I think for the JV, as you all know, the JV was acquired during a period where interest rate is very favorable. So naturally, you expect that there will be quite a picked up if we were to do a refinancing. Okay, we actually have a first tranche of the JV loans that has already expired. I think, in early January. Right. So I think for the next 2 years in January, we would have another 300 million that will be due for expiry as well. So as for the repricing, what is the replacement rate? I really have no idea. It depends on what Jerome Powell decides what he wants to do, to cut or no cut, how many cuts, and when he wants to cut. I hope that helps.
Sorry, so next 2 years, 300 million per annum, or just 300 million 2 years down the road?
Next year is 300 million. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you so much. Thanks for joining us today. I think we are ending a bit, we have overrun slightly. But you know where to look for us if you have any further questions on the results.
Yeah, M Tower, level 35. Yeah.
We all sit on 35. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.